Good morning, everyone. Good morning here from Finland. And we are beginning with the 63rd program in our dissipation of Glaminar, that's pretty good, Glamour webinar. And our latest approach now, after studying some specific subjects, is to work through the book. You know, these various books were gathered from lesson sets that were sent to the different groups the DK was forming. I may have mentioned, you know, but the instructions on telepathy to the telepathy group, the glamour book, instructions in the glamour book, and to the glamour group. And then we had, well, esoteric healing was a much fuller thing, because that's an area that DK is going to make himself particularly responsible for, as one of the, I anticipate, one of the reappearing masters with their ashram. And then onward, you know, education in the new age, that relates to the education group. I think the only groups that don't really have books, entire books representing them, although, well, is the science group number 7, which is in Cosmic Fire. There's quite a bit on the scientific approach, but DK seemed to say that, you know, Alice Bailey didn't have the scientific vocabulary, so he couldn't work in that way. And besides, you know, he's a second ray master, and he could consult with a fifth ray master, but maybe he didn't think it was worth to do that. And there's not a book on economics per se, the ninth seed group, but although there are many hints given about economics. So that is the story, I think, with a number of these books. And let's see, I'm trying to find a few things here. You know, this is one of those mornings for me, and Mercury's not even retrograde. At least I don't think it is. I want to get the AAB diagrams up here, if I possibly can do that. Okay, and there's the hope. All right, got it. Well, I'd like us to have just a little alignment together, and I welcome all of you. Very happy that you're able to make it. Maybe more likely from the South Pacific this morning than from America, since it's on the morning schedule. And you know that every other week we're going to be doing the academic work on triangles. I just want to mention that. And we're going to be changing the day on that to a Friday. So it'll alternate with in other words, every 2 weeks, it'll be in the position where glamour is not. In other words, if we were doing it today, which we're not doing it, it would be in the evening, on the evening schedule. All right, we'll try to make all that clear. But if I try to clarify it right now, I'm sure I'll run into trouble. Okay, let's have a... excuse me. Let's gather ourselves together. And... yeah. Think of ourselves as one unit of consciousness. Wherever we may be on the globe, it's as if we're in one room together. And we're each making our contribution to a unified whole, a certain field of consciousness. There'll be tremendous studies on consciousness coming up in the centuries ahead, you know. Right now, so many people seem to think it arises from the body, but we know that it is in a way responsible even for the appearance of the vehicles of the personality. So we're offering ourselves together to combat this condition, this general glamorous condition on the astral plane, which misleads so many. If we could be done with the glamour of personality, which is a lot like the glamour we're studying right now, the part instead of the whole, it's called the glamour of personality, really, another name for it. We could be pretty well done with glamour. It's all about mistaken identity and the desires which arise to fulfill that mistaken identity. So we'll continue and offer ourselves to help to clarify the condition on the astral plane, which is a danger at this time to everyone. We have to definitely reduce this misguided camomanus, and hopefully we can make some impact in that. So we'll just sound an om to confirm our availability. Oh. Okay, well, we all know it's serious work, and the other group seemed to get through relatively unscathed, but when it came to glamour, there was a problem, and people were affected by the glamour of a certain thought form of the Tibetan that appeared and misled people with good words of mediocre cheer, as the Tibetan said, you know, complimenting the workers and giving them fair words about how important they were and all the rest of it. So if you find the Tibetan excessively interested in you and complimenting you for the work you're doing, watch out, okay, because we're running into the thought form of the masters on the astral plane rather than the real thing. Okay. Now let's see. I have many things going here. This will be it. Well, okay. Now we've been discussing, we're working in the beginning of the book, and we're discussing intuition, and last week we discussed the idea of illumination. You know, do you really see light? Well, maybe. Or is light that which makes it possible to see? Light is that which reveals, and you kind of wonder whether you really see the light. You say, well, I see a beam of light, but basically, you know, you're probably seeing the effect of the light upon the atmosphere and upon various intangible factors in the atmosphere. Anyway, light is revelatory, and we want to always increase our capacity for revelation. So here is illumination, then there's understanding, which has to do with identification. And now we come to the third factor, which is love. And I think it's probably greatly misunderstood in terms of its esoteric significance. It's the Tibetan, as usual, has to tell us what it is not. And I think until we have some kind of experience, which maybe we've all had a little bit, of what is this great second ray? What is this love of the Christ? What is this amazing energy into which we have to make transition, then maybe we're still caught in old conceptions of what it is. So he says, okay, love is not affectionate sentiment. Love is not affection. You know, actually, this affectionate sentiment is coming from within the personality itself. And when the object, which is, excuse me, the object which is loved is attractive, harmonious with your own personality, then there is affection, you know, coming from the astral body, and there is sentiment. It's a kind of a kama manasic blend. Your mind is ruled by your desire nature, and the two together form the kama manas. But it is a feeling tinged thought. It's not a pure thought. It's a thought which is filled with attraction or repulsion, and the desire content of it, the emotional content of it, the feeling content is very strong. So we have to learn how to divorce ourselves eventually from kama manas and learn how to think with purity. And I suppose the fires, you know, when you run into the word pure, you know, it means fire. The fires have to do their work before it's possible alchemically to separate out kama manas, so that we have kama and we have manas instead of this difficult blend of the two, which is, I suppose, kind of a transitional stage that the aspirant goes through. But if we're the true disciple, more and more we're going to be the observer, and more mentally focused, and eventually mentally polarized after the alchemy has done its work. So it's not affectionate sentiment. It's not, in other words, the Tibetan talked about this. He says it's not liking or disliking. It has nothing to do with that. And normally we think, well, we like the people we love and we dislike the people we don't love, or really, you know, or hate or reject. But that is a personality interpretation. And it's possible to have nothing in common with somebody and even disapprove of the way the personality is expressing itself and still be within the field of this greater energy called love. So I've always found it to be a very deep mystery into which we are moving more and more as disciples who need what DK calls the heart approach as well as the mental approach. Anyway, and it's not the possession of a loving disposition, which, of course, you know, it's important. These two later aspects are incidental and sequential. So eventually, we will be kind. We will have that kind of personality disposed towards affection, but not affected. And we will have that loving disposition. But the cause is something else. And, you know, we can use words to talk about these things, but it has to come down, and it has to, shall we say, overcome us. It has to sweep through us before we really know and understand what this is all about. When the intuition is developed, both affection and the possession of a spirit of loving outgo will necessarily in their pure form be demonstrated. And notice he says in their pure form, in a purified form. You know, well, you know, it's always possible under the aspect of love to find something in a person, another person, which is even likable. I was once told by a relative that I love you, but I don't like you. Well, okay, that clarified things for me between those two aspects. So later, both affection and the possession of a spirit of loving outgo, which, you know, these are desirable things eventually in their pure form, will be demonstrated. And that which produces these is something much more deep and comprehensive. And that's what we're looking for. Now, let's see what it is. What is this far deeper thing which hides behind or conceals itself behind the ways in which we usually identify love? So, it is that synthetic and inclusive grasp of the life and needs of all beings, okay, I've chosen these two words with intent, which it is the high prerogative of a divine son to operate. I mean, this is beautiful, beautiful things, and we will have to ponder on these things. Matter of fact, in just a few moments, we'll take a little time to ponder on what the Tibetan has said because it's so extremely beautiful. It is that synthetic, so it's holistic. It includes everything about the life of the other, but it's the life, it's the beingness of the person, and also the insufficiencies, what the other person or individual needs to be more, in order to be more complete. Now, like when a master looks at us, the master knows immediately what our next step has to be, and the ways in which we are incomplete, and what we have to work upon in order to fulfill the next needs related to our spiritual growth and our general well-being, our general welfare. But also, when you look at someone, you don't get hung up on the externalities. You try to find the beingness, the livingness, the living beingness. Some will recognize what this is all about, of the other individual, and you tap in on that deepest level of the person being a living being. And in order to do that, you have to penetrate through many obvious, ordinary things, You look beyond and through and beyond and through and beyond and through until you come to that which is real and cannot be reduced to other lesser things. So it is that synthetic, think about these words, that synthetic, inclusive grasp of the life and needs of all beings. I've chosen these two words with intent, which it is the high prerogative of a divine son of God, and this is an unusual verb, to operate, or within which to operate, or to operate. It's a very unusual word in this particular context, unless, of course, the Alice Bailey CD-ROM is incorrect. Occasionally there are things that are not correct, but we always have to check it against the books, and sometimes there are mistakes there too. Now, it negates all that builds barriers, makes criticism, and produces separation. Oh, goodness. I mean, this is so potent. Really amazing. It negates all that builds barriers because, Christ knew what was in the human being because he was Neptune. He dissolved the barriers which ordinarily separate the identity of one individual from the next. He dissolved all that, and he could slip within the soul and the beingness of the other. And of course, as we advance, especially along the secondary line, more and more, we're able to do that if we don't allow the personality to become a barrier. And then, a lot of people try not to be critical, but they're just holding their mind against being critical. It's not the same as not being critical. This is a big one, He calls criticism that dire creator of misery. Think about those words. Criticism, that dire creator of misery. Okay. And it negates all separation, and therefore we overcome the great heresy of separateness if we have the true love, and that's something we meditated on in the very beginning, the glamour of separateness and the great illusion of separation. It sees no distinction. This is mysterious now, okay? Maybe some of us will recognize this. It sees no distinction, even when it appreciates need. So, in other words, it's all one being, right? But the different apparent aspects of the one being have different needs in order to emerge into full divine expression. So, you know, and he said, one of the greatest psychic powers, this always impressed me, one of the greatest psychic powers is the ability to sense the need of another. Now think about that. I mean, and that would extend to other kingdoms too, you know, to the animal kingdom, to the plant kingdom. I don't know about the mineral kingdom. Maybe that's a very special thing. But to sense, let's say, the need of another human being is one of the foremost psychic powers, but obviously it has to do with the higher psychism and not the kind of psychism where we're used to, you know, seeing visions and having all kinds of various impressions, which are pretty much in the realm of personality. So, okay, it sees no distinction, even when it appreciates need, and it produces in the one who loves as a soul immediate identification with that which is love. Now, is that enough for us? I mean, heavens, this is such a great definition of love. He has a number of definitions, you know, and they all really add something. These three words sum up the three qualities. So we're talking about illumination, understanding, and love, or aspects of the intuition, and can be covered by the word universality, or the sense of universal oneness. Now, we are entering now by the word universality or universal oneness. I'm going to just get that properly done. Excuse me for a second while I struggle with this. Okay, we are entering the era of universality. The Aquarian age is said to be the era of the universal, and under Aquarius comes the grasp of the universal. Now, what really would that be? More and more we are affected by the consciousness, I guess that's all I can call it, of the solar logos. We begin to take the solar initiations from the third initiation onward, and the sense of the universal grows within our consciousness, within our apprehension of all that we see. So we see, let's call it unity in diversity. So, and well, let's just say the diversity does not break the unity. Now, this is a very important idea, and this is what we have to look forward to as during the next 2,000 and something years, we begin to tread more earnestly and with greater effect the path of initiation. So we look forward to the apprehension of the oneness of the solar system, and we extend that idea to the oneness of all things, local and beyond, until our entire consciousness is pervaded by the aperception or the infuception, I use that word, infuception, of oneness. We always sense the substratum which holds all things together, and yet we appreciate the need of the various parts of this perceived oneness. Now, this is what we're moving into. And as we build the Antahkarana successfully, more and more of that will come forward in our consciousness, and we will have a real change of consciousness and not just sort of a theoretical grasp of a few things. So what I'd like to do here for a moment, before we get into the meditation, or before we get into the discussion of anything that may have struck you here, I want to look at this again. So we're talking about this love factor, which underlies all things. And as I say these words, I'd like us to be in kind of a meditative state where we see whether in our life we have any apprehension of what these words by the Tibetan really mean. So now he's talking about, you know, the real love from which the pure affection and pure lovingness or loving outgo arise. We're looking at the source of the arising of the usual things, which in our mind signify the presence of love. All right, so meditatively then. And, you know, we can think of each other in this way, and those who are in your triangles networks, and those to whom you are related, it is that synthetic, inclusive grasp of the life and needs of all beings. And he uses those two words purposefully. Now, when you find yourself to be in this world, let's call it an agent of fulfillment. It's the second aspect of the will, in a way, the will to fulfillment, it's called. When you find yourself to be an agent of fulfillment, you'll always be alert to what may be the need of the other. Now, you know, let's ask ourselves, do we approach other people, individuals, with that awareness of need? And when we can do that, you know, it turns everything around. Because we're not desiring for our personal self, the little self. We're looking to contribute, to help. So it'd be a good exercise, you know, when you meet people in everyday life, and even, you know, those around you, what is the real need? Can we be sensitive to that? It will reverse our whole attitude, and it will become now a soul attitude. So, if we're a divine son of God and we know it, and we will operate increasingly with this synthetic grasp of the life and needs. But we can try that, you know, as we just pick any individual in your mind's eye. What is the life? What are the needs? And how can you, with humility, an adjusted sense of right proportion, how can you help with the fulfillment of the needs that you sense? You can use your thought, you can use your words, your writing, your actions, whatever. How can you help? You know, there was a story about a diver who was in trouble, and the next thing he realizes, he's being lifted to the surface by a dolphin, big one, who sensed the need and acted. Amazing stories sometimes of the relationship of the animal kingdom to humanity's dire emergencies. You know, the dogs that are saving lives, the elephants, you know, the higher animals sensing the need and acting. So imagine you're in that synthetic state and you're sensing the life and the needs, and then we go on, it negates, this attitude negates all that builds barriers, makes criticism, and produces separation. So, you know, the lower mind is a critical factor and a separative factor, and it slays the real, we've been told. You have to move beyond that. Not just by trying, but by being in this greater energy stream, if we can remain open to it. And then this one, it sees no distinction. It sees no distinction. What does that mean? Even when it appreciates need. The diversity is unified. And it produces in the one who loves, this is the climactic statement, it produces in the one who loves as a soul, immediate identification with that which is loved. And I think, you know, we have to admit that this is very much different than the customary personality attitude. So I would recommend that all of us be aware of this description of love on page 5 of the Glamour book. We'll get there, you know, we'll move along. And, you know, review it and ponder it, because it is so revealing. So this is end of the academic reading portion of our present. It's enough to ponder on. We don't need to go into more. In other words, basically, what the Tibetan is doing is setting up a realization of the intuitive, illuminated, understanding and loving state that exists beyond subjection to glamour. Basically, he starts right at the very beginning with what it's like to be free of glamour. Because if we're under the influence of a glamour, or more than one, or like he says about second-rate people, pretty responsive to all of them. So if we're under that kind of influence, we're not going to be appreciating what the intuition can reveal. So he sets, in a way, he sets the ideal here at the outset of the book. So this is the beginning next time of academic reading portion of doggy number 64. And that will be, you know, next week. And it will be on the evening schedule. All right. So, very, very important words. And energies behind these words, even more important than the words themselves. So, you know, ponder these things and ponder the way you think you love others in whatever kingdom, but especially for our purposes, human beings. Think about how you love human beings and compare your assessment of that with what the Tibetan says real love is. And then I'm sure that some realizations of value will emerge. All right. So before we deal with this, you know, glamour of the part rather than the whole, which is basically the glamour of personality rather than the soul, before we deal with our meditation, we can have a little discussion or questioning period, or written period, whatever you want to do. And I'm looking here, and you know, raise your hand or put up a question or a statement, whatever you want to do, and we can spend a few minutes doing that. If you have a thought you would like to advance, a question you would like to ask, whatever. This is profound stuff, you know. I've been reading it, and I read it again yesterday, and as I read it this morning, I just realize how deep it goes and how it reverses everything. You know, in the University of the Seven Rays, we had a section. Basically, we carry that section on through all of our courses. We talked about two qualities. One was the quality of acquisition or appropriation. It was something we were trying to cultivate. We all need to cultivate things to fill out our causal body. But the other was called a quality of contribution. It was something that we had developed within ourselves and which we could appropriately give to others. And I think, when we begin to sense the need of others and really care about that, we will find resources within ourselves that will allow us to move towards helping to fulfill that need. Obviously, everybody eventually has to be a source unto himself or herself. And that's what the Buddha said. He said, okay, rely upon yourself, he said. And by that, he meant, of course, a very deep layer of self. All right. Now, I heard Brett cough, but I also see Vera here. Okay. So I've unmuted you, Vera, and I. Whoa. Okay. There we go. Okay, Vera, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I would like recently pondering on the mental body. There are different the seven subplanes and lower mental and soul mind and abstract mind and causal body. And just wondering, is there something more on the similar on the Buddhic level?
Yes, there is. And
Can you
there it is. There it is right in front of us. Matter of fact, if you also go to Cosmic Fire, page 188 or so, let me see what I can find here. I'll show you the place to begin reading, or that area of the book where we can read. These are the microcosmic sensory evolution, page 188, and here are the different subplanes. Only on the plane of mind is it possible to cultivate all seven. But here we have the Buddhic levels, and it's in some of our classes, and we deal specifically with what any of these may mean. So notice that he stops at subplane number three or subplane number five, depending on which way you're counting. And we have some very high abilities here on the Buddhic plane and the Atmic plane. And of course, that also exists for the monadic plane and the logoic plane. So he says, what makes a master? A master is characterized by 35 vortices of fire. So that fits very well because, the master, the height of an area in which to be able to work effectively is the Atmic plane for a master. If we were the Chohan, we could work on the monadic plane, and if we were a seventh degree Chohan, like the Christ, we could be doing some work up there on the logoic plane. So in this aggregated chart, all of these abilities are listed, but every one of them has to be studied in its own right. Now, and we do that in the various classes, in the PhD class and in the Moria Federation and so forth. So here we have the possibility, once we build the Antahkarana, and really not before, of getting into the comprehension of the four sounds, of true healing, of true divine vision, and then finally whatever intuition is, and then finally idealism, and then we stop. Why do we stop? We stop for a very interesting reason, that the sixth plane from below and the seventh plane from below have to do with cities or powers that even the master has not developed, and they belong to Chohanship. And here it is the same up here on the spiritual plane, that the Chohan can relate to the, and he doesn't even name them, the sixth and seventh plane, or the first and second, depending which way you're counting. And then when we move beyond mastership, we can understand something of what's available. Now, also, if I can do this properly, when we get into the area of the monadic plane and the logoic plane, I want to extend what the Tibetan said. He said 35 vortices make a master. I want to say that 42 vortices make a Chohan of the sixth degree. And 49, that's that number of completion in a way, 49 vortices make the completed Chohan of the seventh degree. And every one of those subplanes has its own particular power, a number of them beyond our ability to understand. You know, because it's obvious that when you get to this aggregation, we've got to study very deeply what these Buddhic qualities mean and what these atmic beatitude, active service, realization, perfection, all knowledge, that's the peak of what a master can do. We have to study these things, and we do. So this is perhaps not the place where we can go into it in great detail, but yes, every one of the subplanes has its own city. Now, going down here, we notice that something is missing on the emotional plane. The sixth subplane down and the seventh subplane down are so low that no matter of these subplanes is supposed to enter into the astral body of the individual. So these are very low and, you know, rather demonic worlds. We're not to have anything to do with them. He says that the hell world of the average believer is found on the seventh subplane here. So we don't want that. And here we have the gaseous subplane, which, and down on the physical, and we know how important it is, this gaseous subplane, to activate the ethers. Okay, so that's the transitional plane, but when it comes to liquid and it comes to density, they are simply subplanes of effect, and they are not really subplanes that we are working on, you know, cultivating. They just respond to the higher cultivations. So this is a whole unit of study in itself, Vera, and yeah. And very deep, really. So we got to do that. I mean, in the Maurya Federation, we do that, get into it later in the program. You know, and then, of course, look, I'm not saying we will be completely accurate, but we will know more about what it really is by building the Antikarana, thinking in that way, pondering in that way for impression coming from those levels. Anything else? Okay, thank you, Vera. Thank you. It's a good question, you know, and, well, you know, there's so much in occultism, so much. We just have to find a way to assimilate, you know, that's the thing. Okay, now I see here yes, Brett? Mm-hmm.
Michael Stacy has had his hand.
Okay, I'll tell you what, I've got just a reading here. Michael, I'll get to you in just a second. I've got a reading here from Tiu. In Dina 669, DK writes, knowing that the potency of love rightly expressed is great and is at this time, the only factor which can offset hate. If there is love rightly expressed, what is then love not rightly expressed? Well, you know, it's usually a type of magnetism that has to do with personality likes and dislikes. And it is selfish in as much as it is attracted to that which is pleasant for the personality fields and stimulating for the personality fields, but is not the real embracing synthetic love of the life and needs of another. It's still selfish, but it is magnetic, you know, because desire and love are very related, and they keep on, you know, kind of one turns into another as we go higher and higher, you know. So the desire from the cosmic astral plane is like what we experience as love on this cosmic physical plane. They are interrelated all the time, rays 2 and 6. But if it comes from the personality, it's magnetic, it may be fulfilling, but it's not the kind of love that DK is talking about. Right, to you. It's a real question to distinguish between love and desire. Okay, and now let's see. Michael, you're here, and go ahead, please. Go on, Michael.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Good evening. Good night.
It's morning here.
Yeah, okay.
I had two thoughts. The first being when we look at the seeming other as if that he or she is a mirror and we are seeing ourselves reflected in and from them. How would we treat them, which is really ourselves? That's the first thought.
Yeah, and it's a big question. Yeah, go. And the second thought?
The second thought, as I have been doing my studies and pondering on questions, I had this thing come to me, and I'm going to read. Being at the midway point, humanity has great opportunity and responsibility in this world period to lift the four kingdoms of nature into their next mode of evolution. All of the outer world conflicts in religion, politics, economics, science, etc., are just distractions keeping us from focusing on our actual work. This is not saying that we should not address and solve these distractions. The masses of people are drowning in the emotionalism of this aspect of the great illusion. As I write this, a smile came upon my face as the thought of divine indifference entered my mind.
Now, who wrote that, Michael? Was that you, or who wrote that?
That was me.
Oh, it's good. Very good. It's very good. Yeah, I said, is the Tibetan saying this? Okay. All right. He begins to, use us as outposts of consciousness. Yeah, so those are well expressed thoughts. This whole identification is what lies under this whole issue. And the great illusion of mistaken identity, and somehow being able not to see our personal self in the other necessarily, okay, because there are those distinctions between persons, but to be able to see the substratum of life, of being, of love, of light. You know, I'm the light of the world. I'm the love of the world. I'm the being of the world. To be able to see those things in the other and sense the fusion that arises when those things are apprehended. This, I think, is the proper attitude. And then all of those more personal things with which we may have to interact because we're serving or whatever, they will be solved more appropriately in that light. In the light of identification. So obviously, as the Antikarana is built more fully into the triad, and then eventually towards the monad, the possibility of identification becomes very real, and many things that looked insoluble from a lower level can be solved in the light of that greater understanding, which is loving and illuminative and is basically the intuitive relationship of pure reason and love wisdom between the different, parts. We find ourselves to be parts of the same thing, and then we find ourselves to be the same thing. Now, this has to be worked on, and it's worked on a lot by removing the barriers, removing the veils. And then it's, like DK says, you are telepathic already. Just get the stuff away that's in the way, I mean, he didn't say those words, better words. But it's the same when it comes to identification. We are already identified at a deep level. Let's get those veils out of the way so that when we see another, we can be another. And so sometimes I say, be what you see, be what you see. This is my little mantra to my self that reminds me about how to treat the apparent object of my consciousness. Your thoughts, Michael?
Criticism. Yeah. The Tibetan differentiates between being critical in one sense and criticizing in the other sense.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Right.
I have a way in which he. Okay, you finish, and then I'll give you my impression.
Criticism, as he describes it later in the book, is the door that opens one to all other glamours.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. One of three.
Yeah.
Yes.
We can look at things that the seeming other is doing, and not approve of those things, but seeing the seeming other as ourselves too. Separate, you know, this is a separation, but it's separating the soul from the action.
Yes, it's very important to know the identity and then to see that the action is distinctive, but the identity is the same. Look, he gives a triple: criticism, self-pity, and suspicion. The three great roots of glamour. He lists them together. So, you know, and they come on different rays, don't they? Criticism comes on the third major ray, self-pity on the second. And what was the other one I just said? Suspicion, paranoia. Suspicion. That comes in on the first ray. So the first three rays give the key to all glamours that can result. And basically, it all has to do with personal identification. Identifying yourself as the part rather than the whole. We are both, in a way, but we're more essentially the whole than the part. And we have to learn how to expand our ring pass knot, dissolve our ring pass knot at will, and then we can fuse with this substratum, which is holding all in being. Those are just words. We just need to work at it until we can, you know, really, really do it.
Yeah, the key is identification, seeing ourselves not only in, but as all else.
That's right. In other words, I always distinguish between the prepositions. I don't like to use identification with another. I like to use identification as another. I think it overcomes a certain duality which is necessary in real identification. At least it points us in the right direction.
So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Michael, for your contribution. Bibi, go ahead, please. Let's see, wait a second. Maybe I can hold on here. I mean, no, yes, there you are. Do you wish to speak? There's two of you that are showing up here. It's nice to be, you're the Gemini twins. Let's see. And basically, what is you said here? I'll take a look at that. Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, Vera, yes, we found that out about your prime minister. That's wonderful. And then Bibi's statement is, it is interesting to ponder on the four different Greek words for love. Agape, storge, is it? Philia, and eros. Agape is seen as universal love, which is mental and includes no emotion, but the right action towards our fellow brothers. This is also the love we need to use when in the Bible it says that we shall love our enemy. Okay, that's a very, very good point. Yes, and of course, then the other extreme basically is the eros, which is the usual kind of, you know, passionate personal love. And when I see philia, I think of the words affiliate, which is probably, you know, derived from it. And I'm not sure about storge, or however that may be pronounced. Would you like to say something, Bibi? Because your microphone is clear. Or at least it keeps on switching back and forth. I don't know. Anyway, one of your microphones is clear. And I can't make both of them clear at the same time. So I'm wondering if you wish to speak, whether you can. At least there's one microphone that is green. So if you have anything you would like to say out loud, then that's fine too. Maybe we're having trouble with you coming through audibly, but agape, you know, that is, or, you know, people pronounce it in different ways, agape, but that is the kind of love we're looking for. Yeah, you're having audio problems. Yeah, I figured. So, well, thank you for these distinctions. You know, once when I was a younger person, I went back to school, after graduating, and I took ancient Greek. That was 50 years ago this year. And it felt a bit like a homecoming. You know, some of us have ideas of where we've been before and, you know, what we've been involved in. And when I saw this language, I really, really related to it. But, you know, it was not the way for me to develop during this particular incarnation. But these words were emerging in the texts that we were studying, you know, and of course, so much from the Aramaic language was translated, you know, biblically into the Greek, but there's also the Greek that came from Plato and others. And I remember from ancient Greek, maybe one thing. And it was, you know, how you can be impressed by something that's at the beginning of a whole book. And the words were arche chemisu panton. And it really stood me in good stead as I thought about my whole life and things happening along the way. And it means the beginning is half of everything. Arche, the beginning, archaic, chemisu, half, panton, the whole. The beginning is half of the whole. So, and that's like Master Moria says, that even to conceive of something is to half do it. So the conceptions better be good ones. Okay, well, thank you for these distinctions. And I would be kind of interested in understanding what this storge is, or however it may be pronounced. Philia, I seem to have an idea. It's a kind of a likeness, a similarity with which you can affiliate. Eros, I think we all know to a degree. But this second one, I'd like to understand that. Thank you for offering. Okay, so any others, Brett? Any other folks? Okay, not right now. Well, if we stay here the whole day, I'm sure that there will be questions like, why are we here? All right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, friends. Well, thank you. These are wonderful words from the Tibetan. And, well, they're probably even worth memorizing, you know. They're probably even worth learning by heart. Yeah? Okay. Before we go on to our meditation, I just want to say that tomorrow we, on the Ask program, we have, you know, one of our more versatile days. We're always looking out for the emergence of the soul of nations and also for emergency situations occurring either objectively or subjectively in the world, and we try as a group to address ourselves to those things. So Tuya will be leading that. Again, it's a morning, on the morning schedule, the Soul of Nations meditations. Okay, and I'm sure there's more coming up, but it just slips me at the moment. And just stay tuned. We'll try to have, what with Joe and Tuya and Brett and all that, we'll try to have the proper schedule for you so you can tune in on these broadcasts and webinars. Occasionally there are changes. There's nothing we can do about that, and we try to let you know about it. All right. And here we go. So we begin just in the silence. There are some 27 of us. That's a good esoteric number. Of the number of students, plus the three teachers in the advanced esoteric schools, 27. Important number. And we're all coming together in the field of consciousness. and we'll work as one instrument using our creative imagination. So we use the protective formula with the cross of divinity involving the eyes, you know, and we need the protection. It's the most out of control plane that we have on our planet, or at least in relation to the personality of humanity. And so the forces there are very great, and you know, when you think about the counterforce of the so-called Black Lodge and all that, their home base is on the astral plane, as far as the usual kind of evil goes. So, you know, we need the protection. So we'll say together the mantra that the Tibetan has given us, and we'll make the sign of the cross, which we find will be illuminated, an illuminated cross. Okay? As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. And see the illumination of the protective cross. Each one of us has that, and the group as a whole has that protection. Then we prepare the three lights. We draw up the light of matter, especially etheric physical, imaginatively onto the mental plane. We focus on the light of lower mind, the reasoning, thinking, revelatory factor. We blend these two lights in our imagination, the vital light of matter and the light of mind. And we meditate for a moment on soul contact now, and we try to recognize the presence of soul light. We bring that light down onto the lower mental plane and fuse the light of soul, higher mind, with the other two lights. And we have a triple light which is fused into one. They have a light which is a vital, reasoning, soul-strengthened light. And to affirm the existence of this triple light, we say together, the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Oh. Now we enter the stage where we use the formula. And as we use the formula, we visualize the turning on of a great searchlight and the turning of that light upon the astral plane in general, not our own individual astral body, but out on the astral plane. It is really an area of objectivity. The subjectivity doesn't even begin until we reach the soul stage. We turn on that, imaginatively turn on that individual and group light, our instrument of revelation and of destruction. And as we use this formula, we think of the light we have extended onto the astral plane. Radiance and power are we. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. The world of meaning, the world of the soul. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. Now we're going to strengthen our beam with the spiritual will, which we invoke from the higher sources within our energy system, because this is ultimately dissipative, scattering, destructive work. And to strengthen our beam, we say, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. Empower the beam. Spiritual will empowers our group beam, which we visualize as ready to work and effective upon the astral plane. Now, we're going to work with this very limiting sort of glamour of personality, or the glamour of mistaking the part for the whole of caring only about the part and not about the whole. You know, we can also call it selfishness, the opposite of selflessness. And we, before we get into it, we think here about all that may be lost or distorted or prevented, all these good things that may not come to pass because humanity and to a degree we ourselves are subject to this glamour of mistaking the part for the whole, of caring about the personal self rather than the soul nature. Let's pause and think for a moment. What is lost because of that? So it's obvious that all these things that the Tibetan wants us to develop, group consciousness and eventually consciousness of the one, these things will be prevented if we're stuck in this glamour of personality, if we mistake the part for the whole. So that's going to be our focus now. We're going to be working with our beam to dissipate this very serious mistake, this very serious attraction to that which is of less worth and that which is of greater worth. We're desiring something that we should be outgrowing, and humanity is there too. So let us use our words of power. And as we do, and in the 5 minutes of silence that follows, we will be penetrating into the glamour and producing its weakening and its dissipation. So here we go. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of desiring the part rather than the whole. We might call it the glamour of personality. The power of our united light negates the quality of this glamour from affecting humanity. obviously, the group becomes finally visible, the wholeness becomes more and more visible to the one who has overcome this glamour. The power of our united light destroys the life behind this glamour of mistaking the part for the whole, this glamour of excessive desire for personality welfare. There are forces which maintain that ring pass knot in consciousness, which keeps our vision very narrow. And those forces have to be devitalized and vitiated and destroyed and dissociated with our ring pass knot. So let us go into our silence. We'll have intensity of purpose as we do this. We see the work proceeding. We understand why it's bad for our consciousness, and we dissipate these glamours on behalf of humanity out there on the astral plane. So 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose as we work with these, imaginatively with these words of power. So we find that this negative veiling energy, which was confining our consciousness to the personal sphere, we find that that energy is dissipated and our ring pass not expands. And we're caring less and less about the personal self and more about the group on a number of levels. The local groups we work with, our community, our nation, the groups gathered around the five planetary centers, and finally, all of humanity. Our ring pass knot no longer is so tiny, but embracing. It's the inclusiveness which overcomes this limitation of perspective, which keeps us focused on the obvious self rather than the real self. So let us sound the Om three times, confirming the work which together we have done to dissipate this glamour of over-concern with the part and ignoring the larger context. So let us be increasingly inclusive in our life and not and take the personality as an instrument and not the main objective of our fulfillment. You know, we'd like to invite you to the ongoing ASK programs. We are trying to make available to you at least two of the meditations, maybe three, that DK wanted his ashramically affiliated groups to do. Namely, the reappearance of the Christ meditation on Thursdays and the attracting money for hierarchical purposes on Sundays. And of course, he said the glamour, the work of triangles must go on. And we offer a chance to do that in group formation. So if you can join us, whether it's on the morning schedule or the evening schedule for these group meditations, that would be good. And of course, this glamour work is all part of that ASK program, and then the emergency work and souls of nations work when we think in larger terms globally on Saturdays. And whatever full moon work or special opportunities and meditations exist, we'll let you know as much as possible. I assume that all of you are on the constant contact list, which we maintain with the Moria Federation. And if not, please write us, write to Brett, write to me. We'll make sure that you get on that list, although if you're here, you're probably on that list. Thank you very much for your participation this morning here. And, you know, let's get this meditation to be part of ourselves and, you know, keep the protection going and keep the group beam going, and you can have your individual beam too, and as glamours one by one make themselves more visible, because oftentimes we are the victim of glamours and we just don't know it, you know. So they come into our life and realization, we say, oh, I've been doing that all along, I didn't know it. So, you know, any time you find yourself saying, oh, look, that's just the way I am, I'm not going to change, you can suspect that there's some kind of glamour beneath it all. So, Brett, we'll get this up on the Makara, and you can tell your friends if they may be interested in this, let them know what's going on, and that they can access these things. And if you are forced to miss a glamour meditation, you can always pick it up later and participate as if in the group. Thank you very much. Many blessings, lots of love, and good morning, or good evening, good night, wherever you are. And we'll talk to you a little later. Bye-bye.